This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Sony Pictures, All Saints, the inspiring true story of Pastor Michael Spurlock, starring John Corbett, All Saints, in theaters now, rated PG, parental guidance suggested. More information is available at allsaintsmovie.com.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Hey, everybody. Great to have you here again. This is just incredible to me. Joe Kennedy is that high school football coach out of Washington State who is punished for taking a knee at the 50-yard line for a post-game prayer. And now his case has been working its way through the legal system. And he was suspended from his job at this Bremerton school district. And now you have a 3-judge panel from the 9th U.S. 9th Circuit Court of Appeals. No shock here, ruling that the school district was justified in suspending the coach after he prayed silently at midfield after football games. What is this country coming to? I just want to play a little excerpt. Fox reporting on this. This is Cut One.
No room for God on the gridiron. A judge ruling that in Washington State, saying that a coach who bowed his head in prayer actually violated the Constitution. A 3-judge panel ruling that Coach Joe Kennedy's school district was justified in suspending him after he kneeled where students could see. He told us back in 2015 that it was his right.
I kind of made an agreement with, my personal faith and with God that this was something that I was going to do, and I was going to give him the glory after every single game and do it on the 50.
Well, the new ruling states that Kennedy was speaking as a public employee, so his speech was not protected.
So apparently, if you're a public employee, you don't have any freedom. Last I checked, when you consult with the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment, the freedom of religion and the freedom of speech, I'm just naive enough, maybe, or old-fashioned enough to believe that freedom means freedom. You're free to do it. We used to have an understanding in this country that it wasn't the government's job to decide whether or not you had the freedom to worship your God or the freedom to speak as you see fit. Yes, there are acknowledgments, as we know throughout legal history, about not yelling fire in a crowded movie theater, and we understand, but this is hardly that kind of stuff. This is just an incredible thing. Now, I liked some of the commentary on Fox from political commentator Lawrence B. Jones III. He's a Christian. He had this to say. This is Cut Two.
I play sports my entire life, and in Texas, it's a tradition that we pray before games and we pray after games, not just to win, but for protection, for wisdom, even for our opponents. It's just a tradition that many people can choose to participate in or not participate in, but I think it's something that's needed in the fabric of our country as well as in our schools. I mean, I get that they eliminated prayer out of schools, but right now people have the right to choose if they want to do it or not. And so now to take it a step further, I think that's wrong.
Now, this is very interesting as well. He brings up the angle, the question of whether or not this actually is just an assault on Christianity. This is Cut Three.
Well, let's not pretend like it's not a assault on Christianity. I know the left would like us to not think that, but there is a clear assault on what we believe in this country that was founded on these principles. We see Muslim members all the time praying, and they don't get, you know, in trouble for it. They're even at some
Lawrence.
Schools and colleges, they're putting rooms specifically for Muslims to be able to pray, which is fine, but don't restrict Christians.
Isn't that a good point? And one wonders if he had been a Muslim coach taking a knee and praying to Allah on the 50-yard line, if somebody would have complained and if the school district would have suspended him. Somehow I think not. And if you think about it, maybe they would be even more reluctant to suspend a Muslim because the Muslim would say, as part of my religion, I have to pray 5 times a day. And so I'm going to roll out my prayer rug and face Mecca, and y'all are going to have to just hang on a minute. I just can't imagine the left treating that kind of prayer in the same way that they're treating this kind of prayer. And is it really an assault on Christianity? One would say, probably. It's the Ninth Circuit. They look upon Christians as being morons. I mean, seriously, I hate to put it in those stark terms, but that is the reality. If you're out in San Francisco and you're out on the West Coast, the left coast, as we like to call it, unfortunately, when you get into the court system and you get into academia and you start talking to people with very liberal views, It's not that they think that Christians are just different from they are, and they're just different, and they think differently, and they have a different theology and a different view of God and a different worldview. They actually look down upon Bible-believing Christians as stupid, uneducated, easy to command. Wasn't that the Washington Post, how they phrased it a few years back? You know, they cling to their guns and religion. Remember when that was said too? Now, David French over at National Review had a very good piece on this when this case came up a couple of years ago. And according to multiple news reports, as he kind of sums the whole thing up, Kennedy waited until every game ended and the players left the field before he walked out to the 50-yard line and offered a quiet prayer for his students. He never asked anybody to join him. He didn't stop anybody who wanted to do so. And a number of players did decide to pray beside him, but that was a voluntary move on their part. There was at least one agnostic student who took the opportunity to enjoy an uplifting moment of meditation by being part of the gathering. And now, by the school district's own admission, despite 7 years of midfield prayer, no student ever complained. Not one. Indeed, district administrators were not even aware of Kennedy's routine until an employee of another district mentioned it to them. Why is that person meddling in it? Who cares? What business is it of yours? You're not even in the district, much less at the school, much less on the football team. So what do you care? Because we have all sorts of big lawsuits filed when one meddler gets involved who has an agenda. At that point, the district, which claimed liability risk, demanded that Kennedy stop praying at midfield, offering to provide him a private location instead. And Kennedy said no. And he kept on praying at midfield and he was suspended. So this is all about whether or not the district violated his right to religious liberty. Of course, they're violating his right to religious liberty. He has the freedom to do it. He has the freedom to do it. Those who will turn around and say that the district has the right to suspend him and or fire him. On what grounds? For exercising the freedom that his creator granted him? If it was taking away from time on the job, time executing the duties for which he is paid, that I understand. I am not at all in favor of Christians on secular work sites or in office settings or what have you, taking away time when you're supposed to be working, engaging in wonderful and godly things like evangelization or prayer. Those things are important, but while you're being paid by your boss to do a certain job, you have an obligation as a Christian to do the job. That's what they're paying you to do. So if you want to pray, you want to read your Bible, you want to share the gospel with somebody, hand out a tract, great. Do it on your lunch hour, do it before work, do it after work. But don't steal from your employer, because that's what you're doing. If you're doing something for which you're not being paid, then that is a violation of the trust that you are supposed to have with your employer. That's not the case here. Now, this is interesting. French says he agrees with Kennedy's lawyers that the district did violate his right to religious liberty, but it's doubtful the district would have taken action against Kennedy absent two extraordinarily malicious and anti-Christian legal doctrines developed by our lawless federal courts. Let's talk about the first one, the steady perversion of the Establishment Clause. It was originally intended to bar the establishment of a European-style national church, and now it has been fashioned into a hammer wielded against an increasing range of public religious expressions and acknowledgments, even at the expense of American history. And so, what do you find? Ten Commandments monuments must be removed from public land, despite the Decalogue's undeniable contribution to American law and moral development. War memorial crosses have to be pulled down, despite their long-held status as a symbol of remembrance in an overwhelmingly Christian nation. And God or judge forbid that any high school student actually see a teacher pray on the job. These monuments and memorials and prayers don't actually establish a religion. They instead acknowledge the reality of a nation populated by a religious people whose religious heritage has shaped this country from its founding. But the Supreme Court has reimagined the Establishment Clause as a catch-all provision that increasingly protects, quote-unquote, Americans, not from actual coercion, but instead from mere hurt feelings. And the other malicious legal development is a distortion of so-called standing laws that has allowed citizens to sue towns and sue school districts and sue other public entities simply because they are offended observers of religious symbols or religious practices that they don't like. That's why freedom of religion and freedom of speech are having a hard time. And I hope and pray that this case will continue to move forward. I like freedom, and I like freedom for others. We're going to come back on Janet Mefford Today.
Here is today's Capitol Hill Brief with Concerned Women for America President Penny Nance.
All week I've been warning you about the dangers of socialized medicine with its devaluing of human life. We saw it firsthand in the case of baby Charlie Gard and his parents, who were prevented from doing everything in their power to save their son's life. It would have been futile in the eyes of the government to spend more money in caring for baby Charlie, but the government was wrong. Every human life has intrinsic value as created in the image of God. All, including the sick and disabled, are worthy of the chance to live. This was the vision of America's founders: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Let us live up to that vision.
The Bible tells us that all life is precious, but government overreach threatens the very foundations of this belief. Visit CapitolHillBrief.org for a free resource that gives you more information about the implications of socialized medicine. That's CapitolHillBrief.org.
From Affirm Films and Provident Films, who brought you War Room, comes All Saints. New pastor Michael Spurlock, his struggling congregation, and a group of refugees come together, trusting God as they plant seeds for a future that might just save them all.
Start a farm, we work together, we save the church.
All Saints, starring John Corbett. Now playing. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. More information is available at allsaintsmovie.com.
Hi, this is Janet Mefford, and on behalf of Janet Mefford Today and the Ministry Preborn, we'd like to thank you for helping us reach our goal of giving 300 babies a chance to live, but the need is still great. Nearly one in four pregnancies end in abortion, and there are more moms to reach and more children to save. So if you haven't had a chance to donate, there's still time left. You can sponsor five free ultrasounds for just $140. Simply call 855-601-BABY. 100% of your gift goes toward saving babies, and all gifts are tax deductible. That's 855-601-2229. This hour of Janet Mefford Today is brought to you in part by Sony Pictures' All Saints, the inspiring true story of Pastor Michael Spurlock, starring John Corbett. All Saints, in theaters now. Rated PG, parental guidance suggested. More information is available at allsaintsmovie.com. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. This headline really caught my attention, and I laughed. Oh, how I laughed. I had such a good laugh over this headline. The headline in the New York Times: Girl Scouts accuse Boy Scouts of recruiting girls. Why did I laugh? You might say, well, that's terrible. Why are the Boy Scouts recruiting girls? That's not fair to the Girl Scouts, except for the fact that the Girl Scouts for the last several years have accepted boys who thought they were girls. So are they not doing the same thing? They're getting girls into the Boy Scouts, and then they're going to the Boy Scouts and saying, hey, stop recruiting girls. So what's going on here? Here's what it says. Around the time of World War I, two organizations set out to mold young Americans into resourceful and virtuous future leaders, instilling in them the admirable traits of citizenship, loyalty, and courage. Members of both groups wore uniforms, explored the wilderness, and swore to uphold their values. But there was one major difference. The Boy Scouts admitted young men, the Girl Scouts let in young women, a fundamental distinction still largely true a century later. Emphasis on largely true. As we have the Boy Scouts accepting transgendered boys and Girl Scouts accepting transgendered girls, forget the transgender. They're accepting the opposite genders into their organizations already. So it's kind of funny for the Girl Scouts to cry foul. But in a blistering letter this week, the president of Girl Scouts of the USA accused Boy Scouts of America of trying to undercut the organization through a covert campaign to recruit girls. The letter became public, and it lays bare an exceptional and surprising fissure in what had been an amicable relationship between two ubiquitous organizations. The president of the Girl Scouts formally requested of the president of the Boy Scouts to stay focused on serving the 90% of American boys not currently participating in Boy Scouts. What, like the ones who have peeled off and gone to Trail Life USA after you started accepting homosexuals into your organization? I don't think those guys are ever going to come back, but I digress. She said, it's the unsettling that BSA would seek to upend a paradigm that has served both boys and girls so well through the years. You upended your paradigm, ma'am. I was in the Girl Scouts back. I was a brownie. I was a Girl Scout. The fact that you would ever allow a boy in who thought he was a girl is absurd to my imagination. There's no way. You guys are the ones with ties of money to Planned Parenthood. I mean, did you not kind of put into your own organization the seeds of discontent among people who just wanted to have the original purpose of the Girl Scouts instilled in their girls? The letter, which BuzzFeed reported about, came after a tense phone conversation between executives of both organizations about possible substantial changes at the Boy Scouts. Since last spring, the Boy Scouts have sought input from their members and 270 councils nationwide about how the organization could serve more girls. How far the Boy Scouts expand into programming for girls has yet to be determined. Options include creating a girls-only program in the same mold as the Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts, or partnering with a group like the Girl Scouts. Why are the boys going after girls at all? Now, we go back to the original gender binary here, and you say, boy, you have the word boy in your title. Seems to me that it's an organization for boys. Not anymore. That would be not too inclusive, I guess. And the Girl Scouts, likewise, should only be accepting, well, girls. Not anymore. No, no, no. We have boys who want to wear dresses and want to be dressed up in Girl Scout uniforms, and who are we to tell them that they can't violate the gender binary? These people, what's happened is you've had a whole lot of people peel off from these organizations. Some are peeling off for various reasons, but there is a contingent within both organizations where you have Christians who are saying, I'm not going to let my kid be in that organization anymore. You have homosexual leaders and homosexual scouts, and you have transgenders. Well, I'm not going to put my kid in that organization. So you have a substantial number of people who have peeled off because of that, because of how they have shifted their own paradigms. The story goes on. The Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts each have millions of participants. Of course, they don't tell you how many. But they have been buffeted by societal changes affecting youth organizations, leading to membership declines and forcing them to find new ways to attract members. So this is how they're going to attract members. All right, well, we can't find enough boys who want to join the Boy Scouts, so let's just go get some girls. The Boy Scouts have also had their own challenges and only recently started accepting gay scout leaders and transgender scouts after heavy criticism. It's just amazing to me. And I guess they do already have some sort of a girls-based organization in the Boy Scouts for older girls. They say in recent decades, the Boy Scouts opened up some programs such as Venturing for men and women 14 through 21. And the demand for girls programming, particularly for young girls, has only grown in recent years. Why wouldn't they become Girl Scouts? They don't tell you. Is it because they have lost people over the years who don't want to go along with this liberal sexual agenda that they have implemented on these once mighty organizations? Who knows? The New York Times is only going to tell you what they want you to know. They're not going to tell you what is pertinent to the subject, I suppose. Now, along those lines comes this story in the Daily Mail, which I also find quite interesting. And I go back to that story about the Girl Scouts, and I think to myself, is the Girl Scouts actually acknowledging the gender binary? That girls should stay in Girl Scouts and boys should stay in Boy Scouts? Because that goes up against your transgender thing. Well, I guess if you start hemorrhaging members, then all bets are off. And you can be a hypocrite, and you can, on the one hand, say, we welcome boys. And on the other hand, you can yell at the Boy Scouts for accepting girls. Such is the way things are in this insane culture of ours. At any rate, the Daily Mail story is about switching conventional gender roles and how that makes both sexes unhappy. What is this all about? Attitudes have changed since the days when men brought home the paycheck and women stayed home with the children. But according to new research, switching these conventional gender roles is making both sexes unhappy. When females were the main breadwinners in the family, they were discovered to report more symptoms of depression. That's kind of interesting, but the opposite effect was found in men. Their psychological well-being was highest when they were the primary wage earners. Researchers at the University of Illinois examined data on nearly 1,500 men and 1,800 women and evaluated their well-being through surveys. These were aged 52 through 60. The researchers first found that men's well-being decreased once they had exited the workforce to become homemakers, but the inverse wasn't true for women. Women's psychological well-being was not affected by leaving their jobs to become stay-at-home mothers. Now, this is interesting because they make the point that they observed the statistically significant and substantial difference in depressive symptoms among men and women in the study. and they support the overarching hypothesis that well-being was lower for mothers and fathers who violated gendered expectations about the division of paid labor and higher for parents who conformed to these expectations. But is it really expectations that drives happiness or drives depression? Or is it something internal? I would argue a very dinosaur-ish prospect here might be worth considering. The fact that women who bear children might actually have an inclination to want to stay home and raise them. And this is now considered politically incorrect or somehow terrible for women to even come out and say that. That women might have a domestic bent that men do not have. Now, I am not trying to pick on anybody or judge anybody or be mean in any sort of way. But isn't this built into us? Seriously, if you have a baby, don't you think God builds into you a desire, generally speaking, to want to raise that child and be with that child? Especially when that child is a baby and a toddler and before school and all the rest. The reason a lot of women work today is not because they don't want to be with their kids. A lot of women work today because they have to work. So, of course, if they left their job and they went home to be with their children, they would be happy. Most mothers want to be with their children as much as they can. And for a man to say, I got depressed when I left the office and I'm staying home all day and I'm taking care of the kids, is that not an indication that men are built for something else? By God. Without judging and being mean, because I know people's circumstances are different. So don't write to me and tell me I'm mean. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just talking about the way that God built us as men and women. If men are the ones who go out and they try to make a living and support their families, is that something that God builds into them, or is it something that is merely depressing for them to violate because society expects it of them? I don't think society expects it of them so much anymore. We're not living in the 1940s and the 1950s. It's not that world anymore. We have gender equality all over the place. And what this research indicates is that maybe the gender equality or the gender role switching isn't working out so well in terms of our satisfaction. We keep coming back to the simple truth that maybe God did make men and women different. Maybe he did. Maybe those things that our culture is always telling us about gender equality aren't quite accurate. You know, this is something I had interviewed Dr. Anthony Eslin a while back about his book, Out of the Ashes, Rebuilding American Culture. He talks a lot in this book about all of the things that have been forced on us, and we just have to accept them, whether they're lies or not. And he talks about marriage and do people really understand what marriage requires? And he says, we're incompetent in the ordinary things of life and we divorce more than we sell houses and we raise sons who are not weaned at age 25 and women are treated in a certain way. We raise daughters. This is a direct quote. We raise daughters who emulate well-paid prostitutes, but who do not actually make the money that the prostitutes make. And yet we persist in believing that only in our time has a girl had half a chance to live a decent life. We're in debt over the eyeballs. We can't make ends meet even on two incomes, and yet we hug ourselves for being liberated. And we look with pity on a grandma who in a single day did 50 skillful things for people she loved rather than spending 8 hours fielding phone calls in an office or scraping plaque off the teeth of strangers while wearing goggles and a face mask to guard against dreadful infections from their blood and spittle. And he also talks about what the government is forcing upon us now. We look to this massive central government for everything, and it tells you what proportion of male and female athletes you have to have in your school, and you have to buy this medical insurance, and you have to bake the cake. And he says it now bids fair to tell you what toilet you have to let a transvestite use, or a transvestite inside, a man wearing men's clothing on the outside but a frilly skirt on the inside, and his identity, a wraith conjured up by his own imagination. And it tells you what you may say and what you may not say on pain of being prosecuted for hate, not for an act but an attitude. He says these are the things that make up tyranny. This is something our founders understood, and it's why we do need to bring some sanity back to our culture by telling the truth. We're going to come back on Janet Mefford Today. Stay with us. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Sony Pictures, All Saints, the inspiring true story of Pastor Michael Spurlock, starring John Corbett, All Saints, in theaters now. Rated PG, parental guidance suggested. More information is available at allsaintsmovie.com. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Glad to have you here. And there is so much going on, so much to talk about. The White House setting rules now for the military transgender ban. According to the Wall Street Journal, guidelines are expected to direct the Pentagon to stop admitting transgenders. This should be coming in just a few days. We'll see how this all plays out. And also on the pro-life end of things, we have this story recently that came out, horrifying story about Iceland killing 100% of the babies with Down syndrome in abortion and trying to claim that this is a way to eliminate Down syndrome. No, it's just human extermination. So a lot to talk about. We're going to do it now with Penny Nance, president and CEO of Concerned Women for America. Great to have you here, Penny. How are you?
Well, thank you. Thanks, Janet. Good to be with you.
Good to have you here. All right. So now we've got this update. I don't know exactly what's going to come down here, but the Wall Street Journal out with this piece this week saying that the rules for the military transgender ban are forthcoming. Mm-hmm. What do you know about this, if anything, and what do you anticipate this might all do when it finally does release to the public?
Well, this is the actual policy system that has to happen in order to reverse the Obama administration's year-old policy that suddenly allowed openly transgender people to serve in the military and then also opened up and forced taxpayers to pay for reassignment surgery.
Right.
This is something that had never been done before. This was an issue about deployment, whether or not someone who was, you know, unable to deploy for even as much as 11 months and was requiring surgery that cost $50,000, $60,000, whether or not that was a good fit with the military. The Obama administration said yes. The Trump administration has said no.
Right. But now it's interesting because this piece was talking about the issue of deployability, that Defense Secretary Mattis will be considering the deployability factor when he's evaluating who should be kicked out. But doesn't that seem like a very weak argument in some respects, because nobody's arguing that they don't have hands and legs and arms and could physically do a lot of the tasks? The question is whether or not this is an appropriate move for the military as a bigger unit of troops whose privacy is affected and whose bathrooms are affected and all the rest of it.
Well, it's very complicated. There's many issues, but deployability is not just about having arms, you know, limbs that work. It also has to do, you know, interestingly, Janet, there's so many issues that disqualify you for service, even mental health issues,
right.
Depression, a diagnosis of clinical depression can disqualify you from service. I mean, there's, you know, certain kinds of injuries. So it's actually, it's very pretty strict on the guidelines of who is allowed to serve and who is not. It's not a right.
Right.
You have to be qualified. But what happened under the Obama administration is this just with one fell swoop, they're like, okay, this whole group of people, and by the way, it's a very small group of people. Like RAND Corporation said, like maybe 1,300 people, maybe under 2,000 perhaps even. They don't know. No, sorry. RAND said between 1,300 and 6,000 people in 1.3 million people that serve. Okay. So there's it's a small group of people. Now, the other side argues, well, it's a small group of people. It doesn't matter. But people who believe that the only role for the military is to protect America and to wage war, don't really care. It's a small number. It's the principle of whether or not you are compatible, your life, your health, your mental health is compatible with service.
Yeah.
So this is really taking into account whether or not a person, based on the idea that they have gender dysphoria, which, you know, the American Psychiatric Association is a mental health issue, is compatible with service.
Right.
And no one really thinks that the commanders in the military are sad that the president did this. It doesn't matter what they say. I can promise you this was a hot potato that they did not want to deal with because it doesn't make sense for the military. It doesn't really work for the military. So the fact that the president's willing to take the heat and say, nope, this doesn't work. We're here about, you know, killing our enemies and breaking things. That's what your job is to do in protecting America. It's not about anything else. He's willing to take the heat on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this is interesting. When you raise the issue of mental illness, you're absolutely right that all sorts of people who are, you know, in the throes of depression or maybe some other forms of mental illness would be prevented from joining the military for obvious reasons. Now, would it be at all likely for them to say, mental illness is something that would disqualify you if your mental illness is gender dysphoria. In other words, if they already have on paper that there are other mental illnesses that would disqualify you, couldn't they just tack this on as an additional mental illness that would disqualify you and go back to that if that was already the way it was before Obama's executive order?
And I think I'm not sure exactly how it was laid out, but I assume that that was the case. So, yeah, I think they just go back to the system before as it was laid out before the Obama administration. You know, it seems like this week the Trump administration has spent a great part of their week just undoing damage done by the Obama administration, whether it has to do with their national parks, whether it has to do with the military. Like, they have, honestly, the first part of his term has been spent just repairing damage and taking back policies that were either ineffective or incompatible with good government. And so this is one more of those.
Yeah, it is. Now, do you have any sense, Penny, that the memo now that has come out that gives Mattis 6 months to prepare to implement this new ban? We're always seeming to see these leaks that come ahead of time. Sometimes they're nefarious, sometimes they're not. But do you see this as something that may be watered down from what we hope it would be, that would be consistent with what the president originally tweeted, that he's going to no longer allow transgenders in the military? How likely would it be, in your estimation, that this would be watered down?
Well, it's impossible to know. And I think the question is, I think this is a fair question. There, throughout the history of the military, there's been a certain policy. The Obama administration welcomed people who had privately been, you know, basically living a life as being transgender in their private time and just, you know, wearing a normal uniform regularly, welcomed them to come out and to switch. And now we're saying, no, sorry, that's not compatible. And that feels a little gotcha to me. And it's too bad that the Obama administration made the choice that they did. And now, you know, the Trump administration has to clean up the mess. I feel great compassion for people who are suffering, and I really believe they are suffering.
Yeah.
But it clearly is a mental health issue, and it's a very difficult one and a very complicated one. And by the way, there's a very high incidence of suicide within that small community of people, very high, whether they have the surgery or not.
True.
And the military is already dealing with a very high rates of suicide of our veterans who are coming back. That's part of the issue of what they're dealing with. They not want those numbers to increase. The Veterans Administration is overloaded as it is, and it's just hard.
It is very hard. And when you look at things like Dr. Paul McHugh, the former psychiatrist in chief at Johns Hopkins, where they pioneered transitions, you know, gender reassignment surgery, sex changes, and he put a stop to it. He said, this isn't helping these people. It's not the problem with the body. The problem is in the mind. And I'm wondering to what extent people like that will be consulted, perhaps, by the administration in trying to put together a plan that will be implemented fairly across the board in the military.
Well, I hope so. I hope they're really dealing with this on a medical level and not on a political level, not on just I think the Obama administration clearly had a social agenda.
Yes.
And that's why they made the decision they did. Now the mess is, you know, on the Trump administration. I hope that they will be very thoughtful and care for those people that are already serving in the military that are struggling. Let's really care for those people and give them the care they deserve. A simple surgery is not going to fix what's wrong. We've got to really love these people and actually give them the mental health care that they deserve.
Absolutely. And I think some of these arguments they're putting forward, that not everybody will want the surgery, so the cost to the taxpayer is not as big an issue as is being sometimes put forth. I don't know.
That's more alarming, actually.
I do too.
What that said to me was, all these young women, and by the way, I've heard from them, are saying, okay, under this new policy, a man is going to be showering with me, changing with me, everything. I have to just, you know, I have to fully expect that, and my modesty is over, and it doesn't matter what I feel, right?
Yeah.
So what we're saying is they don't even have to have the same. They're just, you know, you just got to put up with whatever the feeling is.
Oh, that's not right. We're going to come back. Penny Nance with us from Concerned Women for America, CapitolHillBrief.org, their website. We're going to come back on Janet Mefford Today.
Do the daily news reports from Washington leave you feeling stressed and frustrated? Would you like to make a difference but feel there's nothing you can do? Well, I'm here to tell you there's a lot you can do to make real change in Washington. This is Jeannie Nigro with Unshaken. Real change in Washington takes place behind the scenes, that is, in the spiritual realm, and you can impact the spiritual environment of Washington. How? Use uplifting thoughts and words about the news, declare scriptures, speak blessings, and pray. All these increase God's reign over Washington. However, getting caught up in the fear, stress, criticism, blame, anger, and frustration all increase the enemy's reign. Which would you rather do? Choose today to make a positive difference in the spiritual atmosphere of Washington. For more on how to remain unshaken in a world that's all shook up, or to download a free chapter of my book, Unshaken, Standing Strong in Uncertain Times, go to jeannienigro.com/Janet. That's JeanneNigro.com/Janet.
Hi, this is Janet Mefford, and on behalf of Janet Mefford Today and the Ministry Preborn, we'd like to thank you for helping us reach our goal of giving 300 babies a chance to live, but the need is still great. Nearly 1 in 4 pregnancies end in abortion, and there are more moms to reach and more children to save. So if you haven't had a chance to donate, there's still time left. You can sponsor 5 free ultrasounds for just $140. Simply call 855-601-BABY. 100% of your gift goes toward saving babies, and all gifts are tax deductible. That's 855-601-2229.
From Affirm Films and Provident Films, who brought you War Room, comes All Saints. New pastor Michael Spurlock, his struggling congregation, and a group of refugees come together, trusting God as they plant seeds for a future that might just save them all.
Start a farm, we work together, we save the church.
All Saints, starring John Corbett. Now playing. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. More information is available at allsaintsmovie.com.
We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Glad you're here and glad Penny Nance is here. President and CEO of Concerned Women for America. You hear her wonderful Capitol Hill Brief. You can check it out at capitolhillbrief.org and get more information. Wonderful organization. Penny, you are in the media all the time. You're either being interviewed or you're writing pieces, and I know how busy you are. We're always so grateful for your valuable time that you spend here with us. One of the things that you have been concerned about, I know, is this story that broke not too long ago, what is going on in Iceland. And I saw that tweet. It absolutely horrified me. CBS News put out a tweet, a lot of people may have seen it, that said Iceland is on pace to virtually eliminate Down syndrome through abortion. And they did a story on this. Well, they're not eliminating Down syndrome. What they're doing is killing off people who have Down syndrome. I'd love to get your take on this, because this is just so outrageous to me.
You know, it is appalling, but I think it's very informative of the way that CBS views people with disabilities.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea that, you know, sort of this utilitarian idea that if you don't fit neatly within society's idea of perfection, and by the way, who does?
Yeah,
none of us do.
Yeah.
Because we can never live up to that standard anyway. You know, if you have any kind of physical or cognitive disability, if you don't fit neatly, then you don't have worth, really.
Right.
And, you know, they so callously made it sound as if there was somehow, there was this cure, as opposed to eliminating, terminating, and killing human beings based on their chromosomal changes, their fact that there was a chromosomal issue.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think parents with children with Down syndrome and families and those of us who believe life is precious no matter what, you know, stood up and said, you've got to be kidding me. I think the actress Patricia Heaton got the most attention. I'm so glad she did, because she came out so strong.
Yes.
But, you know, what the issue that we need to think about here is, no, we don't have 100% elimination of Down syndrome children, but we do have a 67% rate in the United States.
Mm.
And so our hands aren't clean either.
No.
And so we as Christians need to go to the root of this utilitarian ideology that you only matter if you fit into society's idea of perfection, that you don't count, and push back on that idea and point out the Christian view that we all have intrinsic value. We are God created in God's image, image bearers of Christ, and deserve protection and the right to life. And then the second point, the second thing that we can do is take the extra time and the effort that's needed to reach out to families who have special needs children and do struggle. Yes. And within our churches, be part of the body and be part of helping them to deal with family situation, family dynamics that are more difficult than for us.
Well, I'll tell you what, when this story came out, it was very ironic because I was visiting with my family. My mom is in a nursing home, and we were visiting my mom in the nursing home. And as we were sitting there, we were just in this bigger room, and in walked a group of probably around 20 years old. There was a group of about five people there, and several of them had Down syndrome. And I was watching how they were interacting and how they were going to be volunteers at the nursing home.
Oh,
and you're going to do
that.
This. Yeah. And it brought tears to my eyes because I said,
I know.
Those people are a huge blessing to people like my mother because they're so loving
absolutely.
And kind. And I thought what the world does not understand about the blessing that God gives through those who are not necessarily physically perfect, but are total blessings to the rest of us.
But you know what? They are perfect. In God's eyes, they are completely perfect, more perfect than us often, because they actually aren't distracted by the things of the world that we're distracted by. I was reminded of this recently, Janet. I was at church, and I slipped in a little late with my family in the back row. That sometimes happens. And I ended up behind this family that I didn't know. And the daughter, they had an adult daughter, young adult daughter, who had pretty significant disability. She was in a wheelchair. Her head was even just held erect by her chair. She couldn't use her hands, but she could move her arms. And later I got to know them. Her name's Hannah. And, you know, I got to admit that at the kind of the beginning of the service, I kind of felt sorry for her, you know? Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, this poor woman. Well, by the end of the service, I felt sorry for me because I saw this young woman passionately worshiping the Lord. And I saw she couldn't do anything else, but during the praise music, and I it wasn't accidental because I watched, I saw she did it very thoughtfully at particular times in the song. She would raise her arms in worship to the Lord. And this is a woman who had, young woman who now I know Hannah has a heart for the Lord, and her family are regular worshipers in my large church. And and I was reminded that, you know, what's the chief end of man?
Yes, right.
But to glorify God and enjoy Him forever, and her life is more glorifying to the Lord than mine.
Oh.
And how dare I feel sorry for her? I should feel sorry for me.
Wow, that's incredible. And that's what happens. And I think about this situation in Iceland. If you are denying people the ability to ever meet anybody with a disability, what does that do to the human being who is denied that experience, Penny? I mean, think about that.
Because it changes us.
It really does. Yeah.
They make us better.
Yeah.
They make us better human beings. And every family that has a loved one with disabilities can tell that same story of, you know, and our children meeting, teaching our young children when we're out and about and we meet someone, whether in a wheelchair or whatever it is, to not be afraid to go over and touch them.
For sure.
And meet them and look them in the eye and sometimes kneel down so you're eye to eye with them and interact and understand that this is one of God's children, you know, and that they have as much worth as you do. And yes, they're more frail. Yes, they need more. But so what? That's what we're called to do as the church, is to love the least of these, and how dare we not protect them?
Absolutely. You know, I was looking at the quote from one of these pro-abortion counselors in the story who said, we don't look at abortion as murder. We look at it as a thing that we ended. We ended a possible life that may have had huge complications. It's preventing suffering for the child and also the family. And you just think, has this pro-abortion counselor ever met a family with a Down syndrome child? Because you hear the exact opposite. I just worry about the mindset, Penny. As you mentioned before, we have a very high abortion rate in the United States of children with Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering how we work as pro-lifers towards showing what you and I have just been talking about to those who think on such a shallow level about this, that, oh, well, it wouldn't have been a good life. It would have been suffering if that child had lived. How do we contract, you know, interact with people on that and counteract that mindset?
Well, I think it starts in our churches, honestly. I mean, for the longest time, And Emily Colson, who's Chuck Colson, who's passed away now, his daughter has written a beautiful book called Dancing with Max, and she speaks a lot about, you know, adults and children with disabilities. She has a son with significant autism. And how, you know, how far they've come, their church has journeyed with them. You know, for the longest time, people that didn't fit neatly within our worship parameters, couldn't sit quietly, couldn't participate, really were just kind of left out. Yeah. And thankfully, I think we have come so far, and I hope we need to come further, of fully accepting, fully embracing families with that have different needs, who have special requirements, and making them a fully invested part of the body. And when we don't, we no longer exclude, we're teaching the next generation, we're teaching ourselves how to interact, and we're setting an example for the world.
Good.
And it starts with us. And so when we are comfortable with each other, regardless of the parameters, and sometimes, yeah, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you have to learn to be comfortable with a child who makes noise in church because they can't. They yeah. can't sit still. They don't understand that they have to sit still.
Absolutely.
We need to figure out how to do that, and it first starts with us. But then beyond that, reaching out to people who, you know, have recently received that diagnosis and saying to them, this is what this looks like. Here's other families. And there are many people that do that. There are support groups for families with children with Down syndrome, learning what that means as a family and the services. And, you know, in many states, Mrs. LaHaye, the founder's grandson, has Down syndrome. Mm. And Stephen is such an important part of their family. And that her daughter and son-in-law have lived in many different states. It's amazing how much is open to families with children with Down syndrome, but there's still work to do.
There sure is, and I couldn't agree with you more, Penny. CapitolHillBrief.org. Check out Concerned Women for America. Such great work done under the great direction of Penny Nance, who's kind enough to join us again today. Penny, thank you as always.
Thank you, Janet. God bless.
God bless you too. Have a good day. And you too. Thanks for joining us here on Janet Mefford Today. We'll see you next time.